The rest of the story. More than 100 years ago, the temperance movement was blazing. Hatchet-wielding activists were out in force, splintering beer kegs, demolishing saloons, and their enemy had a face, the face of a beer brewer named Charlie. What made him particularly dangerous, demonstrators insisted, was his promotional expertise. In fact, Charlie was one of America's very first national advertisers of anything. The bottled beer bearing his name went on the market in 1893. Within weeks, the Women's Christian Temperance Union launched an all-out campaign to get Charlie, to make him stop brewing and selling that beer of his, without ever asking or perhaps even imagining the rest of the story. Now it's 20 years previous. Newlywed, Charlie and his bride are on their honeymoon. The young man's already a prosperous Philadelphia pharmacist. He owns his own drugstore, so the couple can afford to spend their honeymoon just about anywhere. But they have selected a peaceful farm in New Jersey, sort of a 19th century bed and breakfast. Now, the farmer is also a home brewer, and his recipe for home brew, as it were, is in Charlie's estimation extraordinary. So the young druggist asks the farmer if he might have that recipe to take back home with him. Farmer says he'd be delighted. His wife writes down the ingredients on a piece of paper, and that's that. Charlie's pharmacy continued to thrive. But for years, he experimented with the farmer's formula, not hoping to improve it exactly, but rather to package the secret ingredients in their proper proportions so that customers could homebrew their own beer. And Charlie premiered his product in 1876 at the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition. Packets sold for 25 cents apiece, enabling buyers to make beer for 5 cents a gallon. But temperance advocates did not get riled or even take notice until many years later when Charlie began marketing bottled beer coast to coast. That's when they came after him in newspaper ads and letters to the editor, in private rebukes and public demonstrations. Charlie was naturally distressed by the widespread objections to his product. Charlie was a Quaker. He was personally disinclined toward anything intoxicating, toward anything mood-altering. He even refused to put caffeine in his beer. In fact, calling his product beer, that was not even Charlie's idea at all. That was the suggestion of a friend, Dr. Russell Conwell, the founder of Temple University. And it was he, Dr. Conwell, who advised that sophisticated city folk might not be sufficiently intrigued by something called herb tea, so he suggested that it be called beer. Well, Charlie packaged and eventually bottled the beverage based on 16 different wild roots and wild berries under the name Root Beer, and the WCTU, finding non-alcoholic beer inconceivable, attacked Charlie, attacked the soft drink, which they were sure was a hard drink, for many years thereafter. And to this day, the recipe born on a New Jersey farm remains pretty much the same. But the next time you take a sip of root beer, you're going to remember the wrath of the Kerry Nationites raining down for most of a decade on an innocent entrepreneur named Charlie. Charles E. Hires. Hires root beer? Yep. Now you know the rest of the story.